Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this show without the express written consent of the Financial Guys LLC is strictly prohibited.
Securities offered through Peak Brokerage Services, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Independent Solutions Wealth Management or Blackridge Asset Management. Financial Guys, Independent Solutions, and Blackridge Asset Management are not an affiliate of Peak Brokerage Services, Inc.
Their version of free speech is only listening to or making arguments or being able to talk about things that they believe in. That they believe in. That is, and that is their version of free speech.
All righty, welcome back, Mike and Mihailu. Thanksgiving week. We can be thankful for things this week.
Thankful the snow is melting and it's off my driveway.
That was quite the storm. I was laughing because I was texting some people from the office. They're all down where you are, Stefan, in the South Towns. I got about 18 inches total.
That's it?
That's it.
Oh.
And it's already almost melted, all of it.
You know, there's no way Hamburg only got 6 feet of snow. I feel as though it's more because I was personally shoveling and digging. Yeah. And the difference between this storm that we got, again, where I live, I think we got way more than 6 feet of snow. But you remember Snowvember many years ago where a similar snowfall amount came? It was over a couple days.
Yeah.
Here, we got hammered with 6-7 feet of snow in one day. And I still think we should have had the Bills game in Orchard Park.
I mean, I had tickets. I would have been thrilled if it was here. And I think it would have been a fun day there. I do wonder, I mean, they were still like pulling out semis on Sunday morning, weren't they, from the streets?
It would have been a game for the ages to say, you know what, regardless of 6 feet of snow, we're Buffalo, we deal with it. And of course, the Bills versus Browns game was moved to Detroit. One of the super fans who were in Detroit for the football game is none other than John Lang. You know him as Bill's Elvis. He and many others took the trek from Buffalo and Niagara County all the way to Detroit for the Bills game. And he's joining us now on the live line. John, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
How was the trip to Detroit for the Bills game? How did it feel having a home game at Ford Field?
It was different. I got to say, it was interesting. A lot of Bills fans, of course. I'd have to say probably, I mean, out of it all, maybe 45,000 Bills fans and maybe 15,000 Browns fans or something like that. But it was different. It was just different. You know, they had the shout song playing. They had the cool graphics up on their scoreboard, and it was fun. It was fun, but it was different.
I do appreciate when I watch a game and your face pops up, and it happened on Sunday. You popped up like 3 or 4 times. I don't know if you saw that stuff. I'm like, I know that guy. I've interviewed that guy. John, do you think there's any chance they could have played that game in Buffalo?
From what I saw, I really don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in Lockport. We only had about a foot up here. So, from what I saw in there, you know, the 80 inches of Orchard Park, I just don't think they would have been able to pull it off.
That would have been a hell of a game, though. I mean, that really would have been
very cool.
That would have been nuts. So let's talk about you, John. I know this is really an important topic because we want to help you and the Buffalo Bills when it comes to there is a fan of the year contest going on with the NFL. How did your name get nominated? And you are the Buffalo Bills nominee for the NFL's fan of the year, correct?
Yes. So I guess online there was a place to vote for Bills fan of the year through the Bills website. And I guess a lot of people nominated me. And then I was just totally blindsided and surprised by the whole thing. I had no idea what was going on. So, but yeah, I am the Bills nominee. So,
John, who else would it be other than you, though? I mean, the ketchup and mustard guy, maybe. Like, who else would it be?
There's a lot of very great and generous and wonderful Bills fans, you know. But I appreciate the kind words. I do.
So, going back to how many years you've been going to then Rich Stadium, the 97 different names of this stadium, how does it make you feel as basically as a super fan being named fan of the year for all those years you stood and rocked out on your guitar in the corner of the end zone and really being an ambassador for the Bills?
It truly means a lot. It really does. And like I said, with all the great Bills fans and the Bills mafia nationwide, and I mean, even internationally, I met a guy at Detroit from Scotland. You know, so So it truly means a lot. It really does. It's nice to be thought of.
John, one question I have just about the Bills in general. I mean, you've gone through, because I've watched enough of it, but some serious ups and downs, right? The 90s, fantastic. Super Bowls all over the place. Playoffs all over the place. The 2000s, not so much. Now they're back again, and they're playing very well. They've had four great seasons in a row. Does it feel better to get this nomination when they're, you know, on the up and up again, and they're not a bottom five franchise in the NFL?
Yeah, I guess it does. I was totally blindsided, like I said, about the award and going to the Super Bowl and everything. And boy, it would mean everything to have the Bills in the Super Bowl with me there. Yeah. So it's really cool. It's a great time. It really is.
But you are going to be decked out in your Bills Elvis outfit going to the Super Bowl, correct?
With or without the Bills. Yeah.
Probably from Thursday to Monday. Yeah.
So how many people do you get to take to the Super? And it's in Phoenix, right? It's in Arizona, the Super
Bowl? Yes, it's in Phoenix. And I get to bring one other person, which will be my wife.
What? I thought it'd be the better half of Mike and Mihailu. And you'd be taking Mike's barrage.
I was going to say, the only reason I'm giving compliments right now is to be the second guest. That's it.
I've had plenty of offers. I'm going to tell you that. Yeah.
My daughter
seemed a little disappointed as well. But I thought, keep peace in the household, I better take my wife.
I can't believe you're taking your wife and the mother of your children other than Stefan or Mike's barrage. I'm shocked. So how did you even find out that you won, like, for the Buffalo Bills, the Fan of the Year?
Well, I got called by the Bills and asked to do some pictures. And I mean, that happens, once every month or so up there. So went down to the stadium and they said, well, we're going to go to the locker room, take some pictures with you. And I was like, okay, fine. And they said, we're going to go out on the field, might have a player or two out on the field, do some pictures with them. And I was like, okay, great. You know, so, and next thing you know, I walk out and it's like, what is going on here? I'm looking around and like, what is this? You know? And then all of a sudden I go, oh, and it hit me. It was really, really cool.
John, do they do this a lot? Cause I've never heard of the Fan of the Year with an NFL team. They do this all the time, or is this something new? And what is the process now? Is it voting up through like week 15, or how does this work?
I don't know when the voting stops. I'm not sure on that. And I think this is the third year of it. I'm not positive on it. I don't think that much has been really made of it before because of the COVID stuff. So
got it.
It seems like it's a bigger thing this year.
And Bills Mafia is known for being very passionate, having a very active fan base. What can Bills Mafia do for the voting right now for you? Because you're in the running for the league-wide NFL Fan of the Year. What can people do?
Yes.
What can Bills Mafia do to help in that regard?
So, yeah, I guess if you go on the NFL website, or if you just Google NFL Fan of the Year, it comes up and it has the lineup of every team's Fan of the Year, and you can just click on my picture and vote now, and you can vote all day. So it doesn't seem to cut you off.
So if you take me to the Super Bowl, John, then I can just keep hitting your name again and again and again and again and again. All right, we got a deal.
I'll be honest, John. I'm looking at some of these other contenders. You got this. Yeah, it's a walk in the park.
It better be.
Sure, that'd be nice. I don't even know what I'd win, but I'll take it.
How great would it be that, you know, Bills Elvis, John Lang from Niagara County wins Fan of the Year, and the Bills are in the Super Bowl. What are your thoughts on that one?
Oh, that would be the coolest. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that would be just amazing.
And I know you were in Detroit for the Bills Browns games. What are your thoughts? Speaking of Bills Mafia, what are your thoughts about all of the different ways everyday members of Bills Mafia, just average folks, digging out guys like Josh Allen, Dawson Knox, and making sure they actually got to the facility in Orchard Park to go to the game in Detroit?
Yeah, I tell anybody the Bills Mafia, we're the craziest, yes, and the hardiest, yes, but we are also the most generous fan base that there is. If there's a cause or something that needs to be done, it just seems like the Bills Mafia people step up and it gets done. It's just absolutely amazing.
That's something else. And then one more time, what can people do? You're mentioning going to the Google machine.
Yes, you can Google the NFL fan of the year, and it does come up through that or just through the NFL website. And it's all over Twitter and Facebook as well.
I know you and I are Facebook friends, and you're very active on social media. Can people go to your page, John Lang, on Facebook, and then vote that way, or at least find the link to vote?
Yes, yes, they could. They'd have to scroll down a little bit, or my Twitter page, which is Bill's Elvis. They can scroll down on that as well. And it's there.
I'm trying to look up here how long you can vote, but yes, John, you are absolutely right. You are the voting is open, and you can vote a million times. So just keep voting. Yep, keep going.
And then
it's funny. In Detroit, I had fans coming up to me from all over that I hadn't met, and they're like, "I voted for you like for hours the one day." I'm like, "Jeez, that's so nice." Yeah, it really is.
I just voted twice for you, John. There you go. On the air here.
The only place where we actually find it acceptable where you vote more than once.
That's right. Exactly
right. The only time it's okay is to vote for Bill Elvis, John Lang, for Super Fan of the Year.
Everybody else is doing it. We should be allowed to do it too. So we're doing it for you, John.
And John, any other thoughts on how the Bills season is going? And I mean, I'm the eternal optimist. I think they're going all the way. But I mean, and you've literally had a front row seat to all of these teams over the years. What's just your general feeling?
I'm hoping we get healthy enough to make a really good, solid December run here. That seems to be what we need. And it seems like we've got a lot of guys that are on the mend, and it should be a good steamroll right through in December here.
All right.
All right, John.
Thank you so much.
Good luck to you.
Yeah, good luck.
Well, thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll, you know, on the Financial Guys Media Network, we're going to promote this like crazy to get Bills Mafia up there to vote. Vote early and often. The only time I'll ever recommend it.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, John. John Lang, thanks. Bills Elvis, thank you for joining us. All the best.
Thanks.
Yeah, what is this, like Arizona? We're telling people to vote as many times as possible.
I literally just did vote 4 times and just made a fifth right there.
And John's he's a really good egg. He's a really good guy. Yep. And I think you made a good point, too. He's been there through the good seasons, the bad seasons. And I think it's really important for Bills Mafia to really come out and say, hey, look, this guy should be the NFL fan of the year. But again, the only time the Financial Guys Media Network will ever say, please vote as many times as possible.
Yeah. I'm thinking in my head now about voting as many times as possible. I can't believe some of these races are still going on. I don't mean to switch subjects there, but I just saw somebody in California just went over the hump yesterday and won a race. I mean, it's 2 weeks. We did the auction show 2 weeks ago.
And I can't take credit for this, but someone had mentioned that American Idol can count hundreds of millions of votes in 1 hour, and yet certain states and counties cannot actually count their votes in one night. It's insane. I mean, look, you know, Carrie Lake, phenomenal candidate. You know, if she winds up not being victorious, she's got a huge future in the Republican Party. Or when it comes to conservative media, she can pretty much write her own ticket. But you're just seeing a lot of issues with a county where she would have picked up a lot of votes and a lot of irregularities going on when it comes to people casting their ballots on election day. And we still don't know technically on so many different races across the country.
And again, I'll say it. I don't care what you believe in, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, you cannot want elections to drag out 2 weeks. You just can't want that. And again, that's not us saying that because somebody lost. It's just, I don't know one person, their sane mind, that would want, hey, you know what? If votes get counted after, don't worry about it. It'll all work itself out. How do you know that? What if it's reversed? If you're on the left, what if it's reversed and the right starts doing this and all of a sudden the right starts winning? You don't want that, no matter what side you're on.
Yeah, I just don't understand. How can you not count ballots in one night and then have a victor that night or at the very earliest the next day? I mean, even, you know, when I ran in 2012, I had about an 11,000 vote cushion. There were, you know, probably three times that many absentee ballots. But, you know, the rule of thumb is in an election, for the most part, absentee ballots usually always break the same percentage as the general election vote. So I declared victory on election night, even though there were tens of thousands of absentee ballots out there, because we just knew they're going to break in that one way. So we knew on election night, I think I declared victory at like 11:30 p.m.
Yeah.
on election night. And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And yet some states are still counting their ballots and they don't know who won or lost.
And to your point about counting ballots, I mean, you look at what happened with the Facebook Twitter poll for Donald Trump this week, right? If Facebook, now I know there's bots and I know there's probably random things that were going on that, but they counted a poll over 12 hours, Twitter. Like, it's not that hard. That's what drives me nuts. This stuff, it's not that hard to count ballots. Again, I don't care if it takes bringing in 1,000 people to count ballots. You bring in 1,000 people. We spend billions of dollars everywhere else. Spend money on your election to get it right the same day or the day after. Like, you know, some of these things too. I get it if it rolls into Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock and fine. I can live with that. Next Wednesday, the following Sunday, the following Monday is 2 weeks later. I mean,
yeah, it's outrageous. I mean, look, we should know for the most part who won or who lost on the night of Election Day.
Right.
On that very night. And I wholeheartedly understand if you're looking at a congressional race, you've got even tens of thousands of ballots. And on election night, the vote differential is 500 votes. Okay. Totally understand. Too close to call. Have a recount. And then you figure out who the winner or loser is. But this actually adds fuel to the fire of folks who say elections are corrupt. They are, you can't trust them. They're not legitimate. And there's fraud going on. It doesn't help the case when folks on the left say our elections are secure, they're safe, they're fair. Oh, but by the way, it takes us 3 weeks to count all of the ballots.
And oh, by the way, 6 years ago when Donald Trump won the presidency, that wasn't fair. That was not a fair election, right? And again, I'm not trying to bring Trump in or Trump, but how can 6 years ago be fine? 4 years ago, there might be problems. Oh, there wasn't any problems. And now we're three weeks to count ballots. I mean, it's just, there's so many irregularities in everything that's going on over the last decade, like you said, since you ran again. But I mean, it just, again, I go back to, you can't want this no matter who you are. Just can't.
And again, that's where, and whether you believe that there was wholesale fraud going on in our elections, or on the other end of the spectrum, they're safe and secure, the whole nine yards. I totally get it. But the left, they're not helping their cause when it takes them weeks, supposedly, to count ballots and declare a winner or a loser on election night. It does add fuel to the fire and in some respects, credence to folks who say, well, wait a minute, how do we know you're counting all the ballots? How do we know that you took the ballot that was placed physically in the bin because a machine jammed? How do we know my vote counts? It does not help the narrative that elections are safe and secure if it takes you weeks to tabulate who won or who lost.
So I'll say this too. We have a lot to talk about because we had a little technical issue last week. So we're going to do a rapid fire a little bit today, Stefan, for the next 20 minutes before our Thanksgiving holiday here. So speaking of elections, speaking of what's going on since we last spoke last week, Donald Trump announces last Tuesday, it's official now, he is in the running. First off, what are your thoughts on that? What did you think of his speech? What did you think of him announcing? I know you've kind of said at times, maybe should we go away and go to the DeSantis route or somebody else, but what do you think?
At the end of the day, I think Republican voters are going to decide. Yep. There's going to be a primary, regardless if DeSantis runs, Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, you're going to see a lot of Republicans coming out of the woodwork. What you're seeing now, though, you're seeing major, major mega donors, billionaire donors saying, thanks, but no thanks, Donald. You had your run. All the best. Good luck. I'm picking a different horse. At the end of the day, Republican voters are going to decide who the nominee is going to be. And a lot of individuals, correctly, are blaming President Trump for a lot of the election night losses and that he's the reason why you didn't see a red tsunami and it was more of a red ripple. At the end of the day, Republicans have control of the House.
Yep.
Whether it's by one vote or by 40 votes, Republicans have a majority of the House and Nancy Pelosi will no longer be Speaker. But I think you're going to see, again, I think Mike Pompeo is definitely running for president. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to throw his hat in the ring. DeSantis, I think a lot of people were turned off when President Trump was attacking Ron DeSantis, giving him the nickname prior to Election Day. So at the end of the day, the Republican base is going to decide who the nominee is going to be, whether it's Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, or Mike Pompeo.
Here's my thing, though, and I'll go back to your mega donor comment. Let's just make an example and say DeSantis doesn't run, because I do think everybody's like, oh, DeSantis is running, DeSantis is running. I think we'll see on that. I'm not saying he's not running. I'm just saying to sit here and say 100% certainty he's running, this may be, I talked to George Papadopoulos last week, and we talked about this. It's quite the move for DeSantis right now. You either leave Florida and you run for president. When I say leave Florida, you got a really good gig going in Florida right now. Everybody loves you. You're doing a great job and you're growing your political brand, I'll call it, in Florida. If he takes a step in 2 years to go run against Trump and loses, does that hurt him long term? I don't know.
I mean, look, you look at Richard Nixon. He ran for the, you know, White House in 1960. Lost because of ballot stuffing in Chicago, basically. You know, he, you know, technically lost the 1960 presidential election and then years later won the race for the White House again. Yep. So you look at locally, former Congressman Chris Collins. He lost the race for Erie County Executive in, I believe it was 2011. Lost by 5 or 6 percentage points, whatever that was. And the very next year, 2012, runs for Congress and beats Kathy Hochul. So, you know, when you lose an election, it is not fatal in politics. You know, it's just like a prize fighter. You know, yep. You got to get yourself off the mat, dust yourself off, and go and fight another day. So I totally understand, though. Sometimes in politics, the best move that you make is not making one at all.
Right.
And having DeSantis sit back and say, okay, it's not my time.
Yep.
I'll be governor of Florida for 4 more years, and then we'll run for the White House in 4 years.
And I'm going back to my mega donor point with that. So let's just make an example and say DeSantis doesn't run, which is possible. Do the mega donors really say to themselves, yeah, we're going to go throw money at Nikki Haley, Pompeo, Mike Pence, whoever it may be? I really feel like if DeSantis doesn't run, Stefan, I mean, it's Donald Trump's primary. I don't think there's any chance any of those other people beat him out. Do you?
You never know.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Barack Obama when he ran against Hillary Clinton. People thought this guy is not even a one-term senator.
Yeah.
The guy is going to take on Hillary Clinton, the former first lady, former senator from the great state of New York. People thought Barack Obama was nuts.
Yeah.
And he went for it. And lo and behold, he beat Hillary Clinton. Same thing with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, even the weekend before Election Day, I think the New York Times had him losing the percentage of like 93% chance of Hillary Clinton beating him.
But was Hillary, and I'm going to use Hillary and Barack Obama because that's a great point. Is Hillary, though, or was Hillary ever what Donald Trump is right now to the Republican Party? I don't mean his, you know, what we think he did great. I'm saying the power that Donald Trump currently has on the Republican Party, his rallies, his base, there's probably been nothing ever like it in political history, you know, when you break it down, right? So I get your point there about a Barack Obama type, but I also don't know if the right has anybody even close to Barack Obama's, I guess I'll call it, allure that can be like, oh, this guy can bring us together. I mean, I don't see Pompeo doing that. I don't see Pence doing that. Nikki Haley, Kristi Noem, whoever it may be.
Yeah, you never know. And like I said, sometimes, you know, even again, I go back to my personal example in 2012 when I ran for Erie County Comptroller. You got to remember, that was the year that Barack Obama was running for president.
Yep.
Again. I had to run as a conservative, pro-gun, pro-life Republican in dark, dark, dark blue Erie County, in an Obama presidential year where you were going to see unprecedented Democratic votes. Now, my situation was somewhat different because I had to run in 2012, but that was only to fill a 1-year term of Mark Poloncarz's term, and then I had to run again in 2013. So if I had a dollar for every single Republican donor, every single Republican politician, power player that said, do not run this year.
Yeah.
Sit it out. Run in 2013. You cannot win in 2012. And they threw at me, we're not going to donate. We're not going to support you. We'll be there for you in 2013. And by the way, no Republican has won in 40 years in Erie County in a presidential year. So if you're listening to the facts and reason, you're like, yeah, there's no way I'm running.
Yeah.
And I just got so mad. I'm like, screw these people. I'm going for it. Thank God that I did, because we were victorious. We would have been victorious in 2013, but in the same respect that people are probably telling Ron DeSantis and others, sit it out. You can't win. Don't go for it. It's going to be a war. At the end of the day, he's got to decide if he's got the fire in his belly to say, you know what? I'm at least going to go for it and take a shot.
And don't get me wrong, Stefan. I think Ron DeSantis can beat Trump in a primary. I think that's the one person that can. I just looking at, you know, again, you know, Pence, in my opinion, Trump's voters are going to hate Pence. So a lot of them, I'm not right or wrong, a lot of Trump's voters are going to say, I'm never voting for that guy no matter what. So that's one. Pompeo, I agree with you. I think he's someone that's there, but I just, again, I don't even think he's on the level of DeSantis. I wonder, mega donors, are you really not going to push the president, the former president, forward if DeSantis doesn't run? Because you have to win, right? You have to win in 24. There's no way around it.
It's going to take a lot of money to win any political office, let alone the office of the presidency. It is not cheap. And I think Donald Trump is going to have a very difficult time raising like the kind of money that he raised before when a lot of these mega donors are saying, I think we're going to take a pass.
Does he need it?
100%.
Okay.
100%. Because, you know, from what I can read and understand, Donald Trump loves spending other people's political money.
Not his own.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and look, I always say there's two types of candidates in politics, whether you're running for dog catcher or president, those who raise money and those who lose. Yep. And so you've got to have a massive fundraising operation, especially for the race for the White House. But it's going to be interesting because basically now that the midterms are over, the campaign for the presidency starts right now. But then, yep, of course, you know, there's another angle or hook. What if Joe Biden's presidency, his office decides to indict President Trump,
yeah,
and charge him with a crime? I mean, there's so much uncertainty.
Can you explain that to listeners? Because I don't even understand that. So what happens here if that happens? Can he no longer run?
I believe he can. I mean, look, Chris Collins, he was indicted, was under indictment and still beat Nate McMurray. How bad is that? The guy you're running against. And I love Chris Collins. He was one of my mentors. I worked for him, full disclosure. I love him to death, love his family, and I owe, you know, a lot of my political career to him. But how bad is that when you lose to a guy who got indicted?
And Nate McMurray, I know well because he was on Grand Island for a while. So,
oh, that's right, he was your town supervisor.
Yeah, happy to see that Chris Collins took him down in that race. Let me just, in our rapid fire session here, let me ask you before I go to the Twitter thing, because that was a huge story this week. Let's take Joe Biden out of it for a second and just say that he is continues to be mentally incompetent and can't run another campaign, or nobody wants him to run because he can't speak sentences. What is the play on the left? You've heard Pete Buttigieg out there. I'm still under the impression, and I'm it's in my gut to say Hillary Clinton comes out of the woodwork here. Or a Michelle Obama or somebody like that just comes out of nowhere because the right or the left, excuse me, is in shambles. What happens there, Stefan? Who do we got?
Oh, I think Joe Biden's the guy. I am convinced that Joe Biden is going to be their nominee, especially after the midterms. Democrats are going to make the false assumption that people approve of Joe Biden's policies, the way he's handling the economy. And that's the reason why the Republicans did not win as big as they did in the midterms. It's 100% false. I go back to candidate selection. Candidate selection is the reason why there was not a massive red wave and it was only a ripple. Donald Trump came in, endorsed a lot of extreme right-wing politicians to run for Congress, Senate, governor's offices, things of that nature. And so you had a lot of popular Republican incumbents lose their primaries, and the general electorate in November just did not have an appetite to vote for a lot of these candidates. But the left thinks falsely that Joe Biden is the reason why the midterms were not as successful for Republicans. So they're going of the mindset of, you know what? This guy is the one that, you know, stuck his finger in the dam. It wasn't that bad. And he should be our guy for president.
What if he can't? And I'm just using this example. What if he truly can't run because mentally it just falls apart?
It's going to be Weekend at Bernie's. Serious.
You think they'll just run it no matter what?
I think they put him in the basement again or the Rose Garden. You know, he can't go in his basement in Delaware. So they'll have a Rose Garden strategy. Yep. They'll hide him. And look, I think it's undemocratic the way candidates behave, like, you know, the supposedly governor-elect in Arizona. No debates.
Yep.
You know, the Biden basement strategy.
Fetterman.
Fetterman. But for them, it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
They supposedly won. And so I think it's going to see the Biden basement strategy again. But this time it's going to be from the Rose Garden and the Oval Office and not his basement.
Do you think Barack Obama, I'm losing it, faux pas. Do you think that anybody primaries Joe Biden?
Oh, I think you would. I mean, it's the office of the presidency.
Yeah.
You know, and some people may say, okay, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring as a primary, get my name out there, and then potentially be considered for a cabinet position. Yep. I think he's going to keep Kamala Harris. But at least on the Republican side, you'll see people running to say, okay, you're not really running for president, but you're at least getting out there to be considered for vice president. But I think Biden's going to be their guy.
What's amazing about the left right now is your vice president is not even being considered to be a player in anything. I mean, that's how sad it is. And I'm not, you know, this is what happens when you bring in underqualified people that shouldn't be in a job, but there is no talk. If Joe Biden can't run, Kamala Harris isn't even being talked about, not by anybody, right? You're hearing the Pete Buttigieg, maybe you're hearing, I don't even know who else you're hearing.
Because Buttigieg can actually like spit out a coherent sentence.
Yeah, good for him. Yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah. But how crazy is that? That's the bar.
Yeah, right. No, I know.
That's the bar.
Let's move to liberal implosion. So Twitter has reinstated not only just Donald Trump, if you haven't heard, they've reinstated Donald Trump, but Project Veritas got reinstated, the Babylon Bee, AJX. That's the Twitter handle. A lot of people over the last week or so have been reinstated on Twitter. Liberals are panicking and freaking out everywhere.
But it goes to show you that they don't care about free speech. Their version of free speech is only listening to or making arguments or being able to talk about things that they believe in, that they believe in. That is their version of free speech. I say open it up to have differing opinions. And that's exactly what, whether it's social media or a college campus, you should be able to engage in a battle of your ideas. And the only way you strike down what you think is a terrible idea is coming up with a better one and have debate and discourse. And it just goes to show you that those on the left are the most closed-minded, hypocritical freaks because they don't believe in free speech at all, only in their speech, and you've got to agree with them.
And I'll tell you, you know, what's amazing about it is what they're saying now, because Trump is back on Twitter, the Babylon Bee is back on Twitter. It's not just like, we don't like them. They have, you know, they're bad people. This is a threat to democracy again. Donald Trump back on Twitter, he's going to burn the world down. No, he's not. It's a Twitter platform.
Right.
And you're acting as if, like, to me, you let Joy Reid on Twitter. You let the ladies of The View on Twitter. Right. What has Donald Trump said that's any worse than any of those women, or that's worse than terrorist organizations in Iran or Iraq? Like, what is worse?
Yeah, it's the hypocrisy of the left, whether it's about free speech or I just saw this one. This was classic. Front page of the Daily Mail. This is insane. Talking about liberal hypocrisy. There's a doctor in Massachusetts who testified in a trial because in New York State, you have to be 18 in order to get a tattoo.
Yep.
Okay. But you're allowed in other states to receive a tattoo if you're under 18, if your parent consents. So there's a woman in New York City, got her son. He had his name tattooed on his arm, his own name. That's all it was. She got charged with a crime. So there's a doctor in Massachusetts who testified, who said that any kid under 18 should never, ever have a tattoo because they don't have the mental capacity. They don't have the brain power to say.
I know where this is going.
So, of course, the same doctor who says that kids under 18 should never get a tattoo because they don't have the brain power to process whether or not it's appropriate to get a tattoo on their arm, of course, is a supporter of gender reassignment surgery for young kids.
It's amazing.
So think of that logic that you're not smart enough, you're not developed enough, you don't have the brain power to say whether or not, all right, I'm just going to put my name on my arm, but you are okay fundamentally, physically, mentally to say, yeah, at 10 years old, I'm not a boy, I'm going to cut off my genitalia and become a girl.
And I'll tell you, I was watching Tucker last night and they were talking about, you know, it's an MSNBC pundit. I forgot who she, what her name is, but she's talking about, you know, people that don't agree with that, right, are horrible people. That if you don't agree that kids should be able to do what you just said, you're a horrible person. But, you know, this is not a minor decision, right? A tattoo, not for nothing. I'm not saying you should get a tattoo or you shouldn't if you're under 18. Getting a tattoo is so minor in comparison to what we're talking about here. And again, whether you believe in that stuff or you don't believe in that stuff, here's my point to you. Do you really think that a child should be able to make that decision with his Looney Tune parents to say, I'm going to do this now, or I'm going to, you know, try this now? It's not a trial. It's it. Once you do it, it's it. Right. There's no coming back from it. I don't mean coming back mentally. Well, that too. But really, if you decide you're going to be a girl instead of being a boy, it's not like a, okay, we'll just put things back. It's not a Lego, right? It's not a Mr. Potato Head child's toy where you can just put stuff back on. And I'm saying that because that's the best way to say it, right?
A tattoo is reversible.
Yeah.
A tattoo is reversible. So again, it goes back to the loony liberal logic, these woke snowflakes who say, No. Children can never get tattoos because they cannot fundamentally process whether or not it's appropriate to put ink on their skin. But if they want to change their gender, put them under the knife, let's go, totally fine.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's insanity.
But those are the same people that are melting down over Donald Trump and Project Veritas being on Twitter. It's like, you know what? Just get a life.
Right.
It's that simple. Get married, have kids, do whatever you have a job. Like it's mind blowing at what people think is important in life or not.
And to me, what bothers me, and this is not just this issue. This is when we talked about COVID, we talk about the border, we talk about now, you know, this gender affirming surgery that we're talking about. There's no critical thought to it, right? It's just like, just in COVID, it's like, just shut down your business. Don't worry about it. Just shut everything down. That's what we got to do. Just shut everything down. With the border, it's like, well, what's wrong? People are coming over the border. Who cares? And then with this, it's like, yeah, just let kids make their own decision. There's no critical thought of, okay, if you do this, what happens over here, right? In terms of COVID, if you shut all businesses down in New York, what happens to those businesses in 6 months? What happens to the people that own those businesses? What happens to the employees of those businesses, right? That's how you needed to think. Instead, it was just like, oh, just shut it down. We're fine. With the border, you know, people just come on over. What's the problem? Not there's 300 people dying a day of fentanyl overdoses. There's not like, hey, maybe there's people on our streets being raped and murdered. They don't think about that stuff. Same thing with this surgery. It's not just, yeah, let the kids have it. What happens to their mental psyche over time? What happens if they don't want that anymore and they want to have children? We don't think about anything critically, anything.
Well, even the New York Times, in the height of the COVID craziness, because, of course, this is Thanksgiving week, the New York Times actually wrote a story and said that children should basically wolf down their dinner as fast as possible to avoid physical contact with their loved ones at Thanksgiving. They wrote that. The New York Times said, kids, just shovel and eat your Thanksgiving dinner as fast as possible so you're not having any physical contact with your friends and loved ones. It's nuts.
Speaking of liberal rags, did you see CBS finally caught up with the Times that Hunter Biden story is real? Did you see that yesterday?
Oh, yeah. It was what, 1,000 days after the New York Post broke the story? Yeah. Oh, by the way. And then sanctimonious CBS saying, we're not going to go on Twitter for a couple days because we don't trust the platform. And what a joke.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I actually was tweeting about this weekend. That was one of my favorite things ever with CBS. You know, we're going to do a deep dive into seeing, you know, what we want to do with this platform. 12 hours later, they're back. So I'm sure they did a real deep dive in 12 hours
like,
on Twitter.
Whoa, no one's clicking our links. Holy cow, we're losing money. Get back on Twitter quick. Yeah, I mean, but here's my fear, though. And this is how it does impact Republican politics, though, because CBS miraculously decides, wow, Hunter Biden's laptop is a story. I mean, literally, what, almost 1,000 days after?
I think it was 769 days, I think.
Yeah, I mean, after the New York Post broke the story, whatever it was. But this is how it pertains to politics, though, in the new Congress. I have a very genuine concern that with Republicans being in a very slim majority, that people are still hurting. Interest rates are still high. Gas prices are still high. Inflation is out of control. That the party is going to lean towards, okay, we need an immediate impeachment investigation. Let's look at the laptops. And people at home would be like, well, wait a minute. We gave you Congress. You're in charge. Fix our kitchen table issues first and then worry about Hunter Biden's laptop. I do have a concern that it's going to get deeply political and in 2024, it's going to boomerang to the other side.
Yeah, I think it's interesting the timing of some of this stuff too, right? I mean, Hunter Biden, CBS comes out, of course, 2 weeks after the election. Now they're thinking, oh, it's a story. You know, I agree with you. This next 2 years might be two of the most interesting years in the history of the United States because there's going to be a lot that comes out, right? There's going to be a lot of Trump things going on, whether it be he gets indicted or they want to arrest him for something and they keep bringing out more evidence. They have more committees and commissions and all this other stuff. You're going to see the flip side on I think, on Hunter Biden. Maybe Joe Biden gets brought into the big guy, right? He gets brought into it. It's going to be a very, 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 very interesting 2 years. And then you look at it right now, you have the Senate is with the Democrats. The House is with the Republicans. You're kind of stuck there. You have a president that can barely speak, a vice president still that has word salad on the daily. It's going to be such an interesting 2 years to see what really happens and who runs and who primaries, you know, I mean, who gets into the primary race. It's going to be really interesting on both sides.
I think it's great for the Financial Guys Media Network.
I agree with you.
The big winner is this platform.
I agree.
Because no matter what, there's always going to be timely topics to talk about, controversial topics. So the big winner basically really is the Financial Guys Media Network and other folks like us who are going to be talking about these hot button issues over the next 2 years.
And for us, Stefan, in New York, we're never going to have a dull moment here. Obviously, Kathy Hochul wins and we'll see how fast she can deteriorate the state of New York. Hopefully she doesn't. I have my doubts, but we will be able to see that in real time, too, over the next 2 to 4 years.
What concerns me as a New York State taxpayer and a father with kids going to school is how soon, because it's not going to be this year. By law, it can't happen this year, but how soon Kathy Hochul will force a vaccine mandate for COVID in order for children to attend schools in New York.
And I think that will truly be the breaking point. I know a lot of people, including myself, who will be picking up our families and getting out of here. As soon as that comes down and that's realistic and that is a law or a mandate, you are going to see, we've seen a mass exodus in a way. You will see hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people flee the state. I can almost guarantee it.
Well, I know as far as my family is concerned, you know, my wife, Ashley, is a social worker. She works from home. There is no question we will homeschool. And because all three of my children had COVID.
Yep.
The kids had COVID. Our 4-year-old, 3-year-old, and our baby all tested positive for COVID. So if those tests are accurate, and there's no reason to believe that they weren't because we were all really sick for like 2 days. They have the best natural immunity to COVID by having had COVID.
Yep.
And so there is no way I'm going to put the COVID jab into my kids in order for them to attend any school in New York State.
No, and I'm going to use my favorite stat of all time. In people 0 to 70 years old, there's a 99.7% survival rate. So, you know, I think it was actually like 0 to 64, but you get my point. Forget even having it, Stefan. Let's just look at the facts of whether they had it or they didn't. The survival rate, especially for those 0 to 18 or 0 to 21, is zero. Literally 0% for that age bracket. So what are we doing? What are we doing?
Well, you also have to think, though, is that by design? Because look at even the last election when Kathy Hochul beat Lee Zeldin. I mean, there were 300,000 Republicans, registered Republicans, that left New York State since the beginning of COVID.
Yep.
So I think the light bulb went off when you said, okay, there's going to be another mass exodus of right-leaning, right-thinking people if Kathy Hochul forces the COVID jab on kids or they don't go to school. And I think it's by design. I think it's by design where the Democrats want Republicans to leave. They want right-minded people to leave because then it's going to be, you know, basically Soviet Russia, where Democrats are the only folks who are left and they'll have a permanent supermajority for years to come.
And that's where I think a Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis, in my opinion, if you get into office in 2024 and you have states like New York and California that are saying, hey, we need money to bail us out because nobody pays tax in our state because everybody else that pays tax left. Nope. You live in it now. Now you live in it. Cut the funding. Cut all that stuff because you know what? That is the only way. And again, that doesn't matter if you're right-leaning or left-leaning. You do not want the government to have to bail you out every time because you don't have hardworking Americans in your state. You don't have taxpayers in your state. You don't have kids that want to go to school in your state. Like, that's not the answer. And that, you're right, Stefan, that's their answer. They can run the state that way and then future run the country that way. But that, if I'm a president and New York comes calling and I see and I go do a deep dive, as CBS said, I'll do a deep dive of what you've done over the last decade in New York. I'm like, I'm not bailing you out. You figure it out.
Right.
You've dug that grave. Now live in it. That's what I would be saying.
God forbid we have accountability with our governments.
No.
And that's certainly not going to happen.
No.
Well, on that lovely note, it is Thanksgiving week.
It is. It is.
You want to talk about what we're grateful for?
You get
real sappy and corny.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the Oprah moment of the show.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you what I'm not grateful for first. I'm not grateful for Kathy Hochul in our state. I am grateful, though, for Lee Zeldin. I will tell you that. And it looks like he may get a job, Stefan, with the RNC potentially here. There are people that – there was another Twitter poll, I think, that said – they voted on Lee Zeldin as the RNC chair or Ronna McDaniel, and Lee Zeldin won 98% to 2. So I am thankful for Lee Zeldin. He ran a great campaign. He helped us win the House, which was great. Thankful for the Financial Guys Media Network.
It's great to have a platform.
It is. It is. We've had a good year. We've had a good year.
Because think about it, you know, again, I go back to when I started as a reporter and working in media in 1993, the only options were TV, radio, and newspaper. That's it.
Yeah.
That was the only platform that people had, and it leaned towards the extreme left, and that was it.
Yep.
So I love the fact that, like, people have options.
Yeah.
We can listen to a podcast. We can listen to the guys on Saturdays, the live radio show. But at least there's options now, whereas you're not just being force-fed left-wing media like it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
There's options now.
Yeah, and I think in all seriousness, I think everybody has to be thankful. We do live in the greatest country in the world, no matter what liberals tell you. We do live in the greatest country in the world, and we'll continue to live in the greatest country in the world as long as the right leadership is in place. Because I do think if we keep it to the left, they are going to do everything in their power to absolutely destroy us and bring us down into a third world country. And I think you're seeing that in states. So if you don't believe us, go take a look at California. That does not look like a... a first world country, in my opinion.
Or even New York. I went to the Bills game, hung out with your pops.
Yep. Yep.
Bills Jets game about two, three weeks ago, whatever it was. And I went to New York City. And there were some bright moments where it was the weekend of the New York City Marathon. Central Park looked amazing. And then you walked a quarter mile and you're like, whoa, what? This is not Rudy Giuliani's New York.
No.
In any way, shape, or form. But yeah, I mean, I do think you're right. America is the greatest country in the world and we're divided, but you know what? We've been divided on so many different levels for generations.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what speaks to how America is the greatest country in the world, that despite our divisions, we still, because of our democracy, succeed.
Yep.
We still have the greatest country in the world. We have checks and balances within our government so that we don't have one side that's all powerful and one that is not. You know, our founding forefathers had just amazing insight on establishing a government that, it seems like, okay, people say it's gridlock, it's slow, but it's by design to not have an authoritative figure like a king or a ruler in that respect. And family, too. Like, I don't know how my wife is married to me. I have no idea. I always say this, that, like, it had to be an arranged marriage, like, back in Ukraine. Like, my great-great-grandparents traded, like, goats and corn and chickens or something. And, like, she had to marry me. But, like, I'm very thankful for family.
Yep.
You know, we had 6 feet of snow the past few days. And I've done nothing but dig out. My kids are sick. My wife is sick. And she's just been a great rock. Again, I will never figure out why she married me. I definitely got the better end of that bargain, But since we're closing on our Thanksgiving thoughts, I'm very, very grateful for family.
I would agree with that. I've been able to work with my father for many years now. And to your point about your wife putting up with you, I would agree. And I think sometimes people forget it's difficult for the wives to sit there and be like, this guy says things in public all the time, and now I have to live with what he said. I give my wife a lot of credit because I know that's hard for her to have people say, like, I heard your husband say something along these lines or those lines. And not everybody agrees with us, Stefan. You'll know that, right? Yeah. Not everybody agrees with us. And I think, you know, to have somebody that still supports you, even though they may not agree with everything you say or the way you say it, you know, I think that's important. And on that note, happy Thanksgiving to all the listeners.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving and go Bills. I think that's they're going to have a hell of a run for the rest of the year.
Yep.
And don't forget, John Lang was on earlier as our first guest. Please go to the Google machine. His Facebook page is John Lang, L-A-N-G. He's Bills Elvis. Vote as many times as you can for John Lang, Bills Elvis, NFL Fan of the Year.
And we have some really, really, while you're making your New Year's resolutions, we have some really, really great things coming in 2023. I'm just going to say that. We're going to be teasing that a lot. Some really great things coming in 2023. One thing I will tease, Stefan, is more events. We're going to do some more events. You and I are going to go live on location for some of these events. We're going to take some trips to some conferences, some conservative conferences. So we're going to do some fun things in 2023, and I'm really looking forward to it. Last month coming up here, 2022.
Amen to that. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
All right, folks, until next week, if you need us, 833-FIN-GUYS. Find us on financialguysmedia.com for any of our services, thefinancialguys.com. Twitter at FinGuys. And don't forget, radio show Saturday, 1 to 3 on WBN and WHAM Radio. Until next week, happy Thanksgiving, Stefan Mihailu and Mike Sparazzo.